It's my pleasure to welcome to the Salaria Report a woman who needs no introduction here, and that is Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, who served from the 11th and 4th districts in the Atlanta area for 12 years in Congress, challenging all the powers that be. And if anybody's tried to enforce the Constitution, it's Congresswoman McKinney. She is now a professor of political science here in Bangladesh and Asia. I have been with her for the last week, and I have to tell you, she is as good a host as she was a congresswoman.
Oh, that's wonderful news. My mother would be pleased.
Your mother would be impressed. My mother would be very impressed. Anyway, but Southern hospitality lives and reigns in Bangladesh. Along with teaching political science, both at the graduate and undergraduate level, she teaches organizational change and leadership and entrepreneurship. And she has a group of talented, visionary, entrepreneurial students. And they are exciting to be around, and they are excited to be around her and learning from her. So it has really been inspiring to be here. You feel like you're really living in solutions when you're here. Because I'll tell you, Cynthia, to be, to me, the society that will work is a society where the young people are excited about creating and building the future. And boy, you just feel that here.
Yes, and it's intergenerational as well.
Yes.
Because those students, they pull me into whatever it is that they're doing, even when I want to sleep.
But you see, because you've taken me into the homes, they've invited us into their homes for the holiday. We're in the middle of a great holiday here in Dhaka, which is the capital of Bangladesh. And you see how much these parents have invested in these children and how they keep investing.
That's right.
You know, they're building their children who are building the future.
And the children honor that investment of their parents.
Right. It's just wonderful to see that, and it's rare you see and feel the same kind of intergenerational love and support.
Well, look, the thing that is extremely amazing to me is that I've got about 15 young people between the ages of 20 and 25. And we have been all over this country. We've been on probably 8 to 10 excursions, long outings.
Right, so you've been to Nepal, you've been to...
all areas inside Bangladesh, the Sundarbans, Cox's Bazar. The Sundarbans is a World Heritage Site because it's the world's largest mangrove forest. Cox's Bazar is the world's longest, what they call sea beach, but I guess it's the world's longest beach.
Right.
And so we have been to the mountains, to the valleys, to the deltas.
Right.
We've been there. And here's the thing, Catherine, no drugs.
Right.
No cigarette smoking.
Right.
No alcohol.
Right.
No nothing except good, clean fun.
Right. But these kids have more fun. You know, it's not like they're not having really great fun.
They're having great fun.
Right.
But it's not augmented or whatever.
No, but it's clean fun.
It's clean fun.
They're clean. They're clean.
Yes.
They've come clean. They've always been clean.
That's right.
They didn't need
That's
to come.
Right.
We need to come clean
we
in America,
need to come
but
clean.
They don't need to come clean. They are. Well, it's interesting because, you know, I started this trip in Australia. And in Australia, wherever I was, the young people were very excited about the future. They were worried about the different things, but they're building the future. Hong Kong, Hong Kong is a city that's always reinvented itself, but this time the young people are not excited about being part of that reinvention.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, what's going to happen? But then here you get to Dhaka and the kids are wildly excited about the opportunity of, of their future.
Yes.
And the reality is freedom and entrepreneurial opportunity attract.
Yes.
And that, you know, that is when you get 7 billion people excited about their freedom and their entrepreneurial opportunity.
Yes.
You know, things start to percolate.
But now this is very interesting though, because the freedom and the entrepreneurial spirit are kind of separated from the political system. This is something that resides within the people, which is right. why your come clean is so important, right. because it starts here in my heart.
Right. And that's why I really believe that people have the power if they mm-hmm. will embrace that. Now, before we go on and start to talk about the Constitution, I want to just bring up the fact I watched you over your career challenge the official reality on 9/11, challenge them on the missing money. In fact, no one would listen to me about the missing money until you confirmed that what I was saying was correct. Challenge them on the sex slave trafficking by government contractors and under the auspices of the federal government. You have challenged them again and again on all of this, and you paid the ultimate price, which is, you know, the forces that were arrayed to throw you out of Congress the first time. I was amazed you got back in. And then I will say this, you wouldn't say that. You won the Senate primary, and then they rigged it and played a game on you. So you have gone up against the machine. You have one of the best track records of outwitting the machine. You know, they had to spend a lot of time and money getting rid of you. And so to me, it's very important that people not say, well, why is no one doing something? I mean, your career is proof that very talented, capable, successful people have been doing plenty all along.
That's right. Right. And I appreciate you at least reminding your audience about that, because I get it so much. And I said, well, you know, I raised my hand in cyberspace. I raised my hand and said, well, I was trying to do something about it. But right. at the time, the deep state and all of its factions coalesced and came together, utilizing every resource that they had at their fingertips, which is a lot. And people believed them at that time.
Right.
It's a different time
the
now.
The fake news worked.
That's right.
And the one of our great opportunities now is the fake news is not working. It's breaking down.
That's right.
And while we've been here, we'll talk about it in a second, there are a tremendous number of people in Congress, in the Senate, government officials who've been done dirty by the deep state and the fake news cycle. And now's a huge opportunity, if we can break the fake news cycle, to start protecting the leadership that really is trying to enforce the Constitution and the law.
There's a few members of Congress who have come and gone, like me, who went up against the deep state, went up against the fake news, and had to succumb to it. But there's one member of Congress in particular whom I always give a shout out to, and it's a Republican, Walter Jones from North Carolina. Because he's the guy who came up with freedom fries instead of calling them French fries, because the French refused to go to war with the U.S. against Iraq at that time. So he was a true believer in the lies and the propaganda. But then, over the course of many people challenging, he heard them. And he decided that, well, I have been lied to. And I personally saw him carry his congressional letterhead everywhere he went. And the purpose was that he was always writing
right.
I'm sorry notes to all of the families of the soldiers who died
right.
in Iraq.
Right.
That man is someone whom I look up to, and I'm just happy that he's still in the Congress, because he's sort of like that beacon out there, and he is the one, I believe, that we can count on to champion what we're talking about
right.
in terms of the Constitution.
So one of the most important things we can do to enforce the Constitution is to enforce the leadership that is willing to enforce the Constitution. And so the day that the Walter Jones start getting more support from people
yes.
than Chuck Schumer.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
That's
or John right. McCain. We're going to get into John McCain. Okay, so let's turn to the Constitution. One of the things that I've begun to appreciate as a result of starting this conversation about, okay, well, how do we enforce the Constitution, is I'm learning how few people really understand how powerful the Constitution has been in as both a spiritual and a legal covenant, and how important it is to protecting us. In other words, we take it for granted. We don't understand what's going to happen if it goes away. So what I would really appreciate if you could just say a few words about why you believe, having been a congresswoman, having dealt with many different political and legal issues in the United States and, you know, globally through the United States, what does the Constitution mean to you? Why do you think it's important?
I guess I'll start as a professor would start and say, well, it's the governing structure of our state. It provides the state with legitimacy when the rules, regulations, values that are professed in the Constitution are abided by not only the citizens, but those who are elected in the Republic to represent the citizens. The only thing is who gets defined as a citizen. And so you can have a wonderful document, but if it's not implemented, or if it's implemented by imperfect people, then the appearance is that you've got an imperfect document. When maybe it's not imperfect, it's just that we haven't reached the ideal to which those who wrote the Constitution aspired. And so maybe that's what I would say. The Constitution also, as any Constitution does, expresses our values. What is it that we stand for as citizens of the United States? And if we say one thing and do another, then of course we lose the legitimacy. Of the state loses its legitimacy. If the citizens allow the state to lose its legitimacy, then one of the questions that I've been grappling with is, to what extent are we also complicit,
right,
in the transgressions of the state? So if we don't provide the, as Clausewitz would say, the
juice,
the friction,
right,
the friction.
Right.
If we're not frictioning against the ideals and the values that are expressed in the Constitution, then we're part of the problem. We're part of that.
Well, I would say it this way. We have a covenant. We have a group agreement, and that group agreement at a spiritual and cultural level is unbelievably powerful. So until about 1996, you used to hear lots of Americans just say off the cuff, hey, it's a free country. In other words, I don't like you, you don't like me, but I honor your right to be free, to have a right, to have opportunity, to have a right to own property. So I respect and free speech to say whatever you want. And so that was a covenant where Americans, no matter what their background was, afforded each other a kind of respect.
Well, we had the Bill of Rights, right, and we could say, it's my right.
Right.
And the others could say, well, yeah, it's a right. And so, like during the civil rights movement, you would get black attorneys who were representing the Klan in free speech cases, because at the end of the day, the ability of the Klan to articulate their vision,
right,
is must remain intact, so that the rest of us, so that we blacks can articulate our vision,
right,
and so. But there have been justifications for the erosions that have taken place of our rights in the Bill of Rights, right, to the extent that we have a president, or we had a president, who said, what's the Constitution? It's just a piece of paper.
Well, it's, to me, it's something very powerful. Now, what you and I have seen, and many people who I talk to about this have seen, is the government break the law repeatedly for many decades now, you know, if not from the very beginning. And so they say, well, we're not following it anyway. Who cares? And the reality is, if you think these guys are breaking the Constitution now, wait till you see what they can do if they tear it up. So we did a great Salieri report with constitutional scholar Edwin Vieira about why you shouldn't have a constitutional convention, because then they can tear it up. And if you think they're bad now, wait till you see what they can do when they tear it up. So what I try and impress on people is having the formal law be what it is now still gives us tremendous, it gives us that spiritual and cultural covenant, but it also makes it much harder and much more expensive than to break it. And given how much they're breaking it now, you tear it up, you know, it's, we're talking about a world where there are no property rights, where there are no human rights. You know, we're talking about an exceptionally totalitarian society, and I would argue slavery. So I always try and get my subscribers to watch the Aaron Rousseau video where he talks about how the Rockefellers want everybody chipped. So, you know, they're going to do stuff like that.
Well, they've already started doing stuff like that.
Exactly.
So, I was in the Congress when they passed the legislation to require all farm animals to be chipped.
Right.
So that was the beginning. I clearly understood where
that was
headed.
Going. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So now the divergence of the practice from the ideal,
right,
is what caused me to take stock of myself. And so first of all, of our political system and then of myself, because at some point, if the people of the United States don't engage when their ideals and the legitimacy of the state is being abridged, then the blowback from that those behaviors, those actions, comes back to the people of the U.S.
Right.
So now, is that right or is that not right? Because here you talk about the targeting of civilians. This is something I'm grappling with right now. To what extent are civilians, when do we stop being civilians? Now,
we're responsible. Under the Constitution, everything the United States does, we're responsible. Our property is responsible for supporting the debt. We're collateral. We and our property are collateral. So if the state goes down or the state loses legitimacy and their financial or legal ramifications to us, we're on the hook.
So now in 2007, I declared my independence from the national leadership that was trying to make me complicit in the war crimes, torture, crimes against humanity, crimes against the peace, all of
right.
that. I said, okay, I'm out. But now what I'm still grappling with is how do I make that into an action item? How do I operationalize being out in every sense of the word? And probably at this point, the most important sense, which is the most difficult sense. I'm out intellectually. I'm out of that in my heart and my spirit and my soul, but I still have the financial entanglement.
Right. So we're going to talk about how, and that's the question we all have is how. Because in fact, for you to make enormous progress on the how, you need other people to be part of that. So we're going to talk about before we go on, I want to bring up two parts of the Constitution. You know, one thing to just do is sit down and read it. Read the Declaration of Independence, read the Bill of Rights, and read the Constitution. But there are two things I want to bring up because they'll come up in this discussion. One is the Appropriations Clause. No money shall be drawn from the treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law in a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time, which means you can't spend money that Congress hasn't appropriated and you got to disclose. Now, we know they are in complete and utter violation of that. The second is the War Powers Clause. And that's from Article 1. The Congress shall have the power to declare war, grant letters of marque and reprisal, and make rules concerning captures on land and water. So no wars unless Congress approves. Now, what you told me, which I didn't realize, is that there is case law that says if Congress appropriates, that's deemed to be approval under the War Powers.
That's right. And okay. So that has been driven home time and time again through the courageous actions of Dennis Kucinich when he was in the Congress.
Amazing
when,
man.
When he went to court, I think he did it against Iraq, but I know he did it against Libya.
Right.
And so then the courts reaffirm when Congress appropriates the funds for the war, that can be construed as Congress's authorization for the war.
Right. Now, what that means is if we have set up a structure between Congress and Treasury that DOD, the Department of Defense, can spend infinite amounts, because we know $11 trillion is missing. So if they appropriate, the war is approved. If they don't appropriate, they just spend the money and go do it anyway.
Well, they don't, and they don't disclose.
Right.
So it's amazing to me. It's outrageous that you don't have 535 members of Congress jumping up and down because the Pentagon won't reveal to whom it gave money that in these untrackable, so-called untrackable transactions. Because we know that it's a transaction, somebody got something.
It's trackable. I mean,
right.
All the wires batch and go through the New York Fed, it's trackable. There's a digital record.
Okay, right. So it's trackable and it's not disclosed.
Right.
So this is purposeful behavior to hide certain activities from the people of the U.S. in addition to the secret budget, like, for example, the secret intelligence budget that's classified. Why should it be classified? The people of the U.S. deserve to know what their government is doing.
Right. So you have a machinery where a group of people in the deep state can basically print or borrow an infinite amount of money and spend it on a non-disclosed basis completely outside of the Constitution. And this allows them literally to run an entire planet by force.
Absolutely. And to do anything else with the money, that's how you get whole pallets of U.S. dollars sent to Iraq.
Right.
It's ridiculous. It's outrageous. And I've been outraged for a very long time.
Well, what we're saying is the appropriation clause and the War Powers Clause in combination are not being enforced. And until and unless they are enforced, you know, you're literally seeing a machinery that's going to destroy the planet.
Absolutely. So, I agree with you.
Right. And part of our challenge is to change that, it's going to take all of us, and not just in the United States, but globally.
The people of the United States have a huge responsibility to hold their government accountable, because all roads lead to Washington, D.C.
Right.
And if Washington, D.C. is messed up, then the rest of the world is so messed up.
The bank depository and all the financial servicing and other work is done through the New York Fed member banks for the U.S. government. So the U.S. government doesn't have its own bank accounts. It banks with all the New York Fed member banks. And the Exchange Stabilization Fund, its slush fund, is run by the New York Fed member banks' agent. And all of its information systems, unfortunately, now are run by the big defense contractors with those banks. And so it doesn't have information or financial sovereignty. And part of enforcing the Constitution is getting that back.
It absolutely doesn't have information sovereignty. And instead, what you've got is the Fed claiming its sovereignty,
right,
distinct and separate from the United States government.
I would say we have a few structural problems. Now, why is this important to you? So what happens if we don't enforce the Constitution, but in fact change it? Let me talk numbers, because since 1998, $40 trillion has disappeared in bailouts and missing money, and even more in quantitative easing. I could take this number. I could estimate it up to $100 trillion. So now they have $40 trillion, but that's not on the balance sheet. However, if you look at the law, our property, your property, my property, our retirement savings is on the balance sheet. So one of the things the Constitutional Convention push is trying to do is to push a balanced budget amendment. Well, if we're going to balance the budget with our retirement savings and property on budget, but the $40 trillion they just stole off budget, guess what's going to happen?
Right.
Okay.
And the people pay the ultimate price, as always. So our part of what we have to demand is that we want that money back. We want that money back for our infrastructure, for our children, for education, for everything that has gone undone and stolen.
So let me just make this point. People always say, oh, well, it's gone. We can't get it back. Not true. That's not true. That money went someplace, and now there are assets that exist. And the ownership interest in those assets can be back on the table.
Well, they should be back on
right.
the table. And
right.
this is what partially got me into trouble, is that then I said, okay, well, let me start calling names.
Right.
And it's very important for us to call names, because if you make it a charge or an attack and it's not a direct hit,
right.
it goes over people's heads.
Right.
And so there, I mean, you've been engaged in this conversation for 30 years.
Right.
I've only started the conversation last year, or
right.
maybe some people started it in 2001 with September 11th.
Right.
So there's a whole body of knowledge out there that I don't have. So really, you don't have the luxury of trying to educate me by going over my head. If you
right.
really want me to get it, you gotta hit directly. And
okay.
that's why calling names becomes important.
Okay, which brings us to our next topic, slug management. So I
just pour salt on mine.
One of my simple constructs is that in any community, in any country, in any organization, any business, 10% of the people are what I would call net energy plus. They give more than they take. Those are your entrepreneurs, so you're net energy plus. Then 80% are followers. They just follow around whoever is in charge. They're busy. They're having kids. They're doing whatever. Some of us go back and forth between being followers and net energy plus. And then you have a group I call the net energy minus, and my nickname for them are the slugs. The slugs always drain. And some of the slugs are scorpions, which mean they enjoy draining. They enjoy busting things. They enjoy breaking things, making them not work. And the slugs will always be with us. And I grew up in a neighborhood in West Philadelphia, and it was a very multiracial, multicultural, multi-religion. But all the different people, the net energy plus people, could figure out who each other was, you know. And they would organize to do slug management very quietly, because they could cut off the slug's money. But then when government money and the drugs came in, the net energy plus people lost the ability to cut off the slug's money. You know, the rich and powerful slugs figured out how to use, you know, sort of the local slugs. So part of our problem is slug management, because basically what we've done is we've allowed a group, networks of people, to get the bit in their teeth, and they are running a system where they're centralizing power and political and economic power, and it's shrinking the total pie. But they don't care, because they're slugs.
They don't care one whit.
Right.
So now, it's interesting that we're having this discussion, because I introduced a new word to my political science students. And that word is kakistocracy. So that is leadership governance by the least qualified, the most corrupt, the most vile kinds of personalities are the ones that are able to claw their way to the top.
Right.
And so this phenomenon of kakistocracy then led me to consider the entire scenario in a republic is that I'm a sovereign individual and I take my sovereignty and I give it to someone else and then I beg them, please do this for me, please do that for me.
Right.
And so maybe built into that particular power configuration is this inability to control the slugs.
Right. So let's talk about a very important thing. You said we got to name names. So let's talk about who the slugs are. And they're different, you know, they're different constructs. One, you have this construct of the pilgrims and the Ziocons, which I think is very useful and very interesting because you're basically targeting two power groups. So the Ziocons is a mixture of Zionists and neocons, and then the pilgrims are like the old line WASPs. And we've seen power bounce around back and forth between these two groups. And there's no doubt about it. Part of what we're watching is a sort of integrated merger of the pilgrims and the Ziocons. You know, I call them the neocons, but we're looking at this merger and at the root of it, it's basically an organized crime model. But I would say, and the reason I use the term Scorpio, you know, to me, they are demonic. And so, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen the movies Eyes Wide Shut, but these are people who go off and, you know, they do Luciferian. I mean, so we're talking about some pretty perverted stuff here. But maybe if you could just say a few words about the Ziocons and the Pilgrims and what you saw in 12 years of, in Congress.
Well, I came up with the Pilgrims and the Ziocons because I was trying to understand what I was witnessing and what I was experiencing when I was in Congress. And there was that level of contention that was going on for who's actually going to control the reins of the state and all of the powers of the governing apparatus of the United States of America. What I believe is that there was a point at which the Pilgrims and the Ziocons, they shared a mission.
Right.
Now, according to Dr. Peter Turchin, who comes up with this idea of cliodynamics, where he tries to mathematize history. So he says that at one point you have a united deep state. Then the apparatus of the state is incapable of satisfying in periods of boom all of the power demands of every individual that's in the deep state.
Right.
So then that's when you see the factionalization taking place. So this is where we are, I believe, now.
When I say the debt growth model is over, what I'm saying is the spigot of infinite free money is over, and now it's, I call it the Midianite thing. The fighting is beginning because there's not enough juice to satisfy all the criminals.
That's right.
Okay, so I have a very famous story where I was in a meeting with Jack Kemp, and Jack Kemp said, the law, I don't have to obey the law. I report to something higher, you know. And what he was implying is, if you watch again Eyes Wide Shut, that there's this group of, like, you know, secret societies, and they are above the law.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw...
Well, we've seen that. Why isn't Hillary Clinton before the ICC? Why isn't she even before the New York courts? I mean, why is she... this is a woman who is a serial criminal.
Right.
And yet, as you say, crime that pays is crime that stays.
Right. So... let's give an example of some of the people. So some of the neocons are pretty much named, but if you look at Congress, I mean, the Ziocons are in full blossom. So I'm thinking of Lindsey Graham. I'm thinking of John McCain. I'm thinking of Chuck Schumer. I mean, one thing I'll give Chuck Schumer credit, he explained the issue. you know, he got on TV and basically said the president can't buck the intelligence agencies because they'll get you.
That's now, right. They I don't have think 24 ways to Sunday
to get you.
Yeah.
And what Chuck Schumer was saying was we're not obeying the Constitution because the president does not. If you look at the powers and authorities of the president, he doesn't have any of that. He does what he's told by the intelligence agencies, which is, in fact, how it's been working since they shot John F. Kennedy, you know, yes. in broad daylight. Now, I have a theory, and that is the Pilgrims, you know, when I sort of started moving up the system, the Pilgrims were in control,
mm-hmm.
but they used the Ziacons to do their dirty tricks. And, you know, if they wanted wholesale criminality to pool a lot of capital, they would use the Ziacons to do it.
Well, then that was their slug management.
Right.
And then something happened.
Right. Well, you'll see throughout history, whenever you depend on somebody to operationalize it, at some point they get, they lever up their power. So we go through the bailout, suddenly, you know, $27 trillion gets stolen, and suddenly the Ziacons are no longer doing the dirty tricks, they're at the table.
That's right.
Right. Well, part of it is in 95, it was made very clear to me that the Pilgrims decided they were giving up on the country. They were pulling all their money out. That was part of the financial coup d'etat and getting all the money out. The question, of course, where are you going to go? The other thing I wanted to do is talk about the role of Israel. There was, I think in the 90s, one of the head of the FBI said that Israel was the greatest threat to national security of this country. But what we're watching within the Ziacons, there's a very strong relationship between the Ziacons and Israel, and Israel's governmental capacity, so the Mossad and the defense industry, everything. But we are watching an explosion of government officials, politicians, people in the military who have dual citizenship.
Yes, and it's a problem. Under Putin's leadership, the Duma passed a rule saying that no Duma member could have dual citizenship. So you're at least loyal to Russia if
right.
you're going to serve,
right.
in quotation marks, Russia. So the situation is not the same in the U.S., and therefore we can get someone like a Rahm Emanuel who served with me and then who organized to make sure that I was kicked out of the Congress while he was in charge of the DCCC, that served in the Israeli Defense Forces, but
right.
not in the U.S. military.
Well, the one I'm thinking of is Dov Zakheim, who was instrumental in the undocumentable adjustments at the DOD and sort of papering it over. And again, dual citizenship. Here's why this is all important. What you're talking about is, with both the Pilgrims and the Ziacons, is getting a relatively small group of people together, and through the federal credit mechanism and the subversion of the war clause, giving them the machinery that gives them the ability to institute violence under the rule of law globally on a non-transparent basis.
Right, on a non-transparent basis. But I say that the Ziacons don't care about the survival of the U.S. Why else would they push war against Russia, maybe Russia, China, and Iran and Hezbollah together, and the United States can't win that war and shouldn't even fight it?
But if the U.S. and Russia destroy each other.
Right, then they are ascendant.
Then they are ascendant, you know, be it from Israel or wherever. So,
that's
so
right.
They've got a place in mind, but they all have second passports.
That's right. Well, we can look at what happened at, in fact, I call this probably, I can't remember, even remember now, back in the 1990s or so, observing what happened with the fall of the Soviet Union, and so from the Yeltsin years to the Gorbachev years, and just observing what happened there, and then it went to Argentina What's to say that it's not going to happen in the United States? That's what I was saying a long time ago. And now it's here.
What I believe the Ziacons want is to break the United States up into 5 or 6 countries.
Well, they balkanize everything else. Right. They've successfully balkanized Sudan.
Right.
And I witnessed 2 Sudanese women literally crying because one was from the north, one was from the south. And they're supposed to be enemies now because they're supposed to hate each other and their country has been broken. That's the Ziacons. If they would do it over there, why wouldn't they do it here?
Right. You circulate population and balkanize political states so no one has any power.
That's exactly right.
And I think it's hard for people to understand just how psychopathic they are.
They don't care. Well, the map of, you know, creating the new Kurdistan, and of course that requires, and I've been with the Kurds, I've been with Kurdish leaders, so I understand and support their cry for freedom and dignity and being able to speak their language, which of course they couldn't even do when they were in, you know, the Turkish part of the Kurdish population. So there's a difference between a legitimate aspiration for freedom and someone else coming in and using that legitimate aspiration for freedom for their own goals, which are demonic, as you say.
Right. It's funny. Kunstler, James Howard Kunstler, just wrote a long article. He must use the word demonic 20 times. And so this is a pretty secular guy. I mean, I've been using demonic for 20 years, but it's hard for most people to relate, but when you see the scorpion-like behavior, that's when you realize, oh, these guys get power from destroying everything.
Look, let me tell you what I did. I read something, which I can't even remember now where I read it. So I read, and then I went back and I looked at Eyes Wide Shut, tried to look at it anyway.
Right.
And then I went to when Scalia was, whatever happened, to Scalia.
Was assassinated.
And looked at the way those men, they were all men, they were dressed in some, you know, strange, this part of a society, they were dressed really strangely. And then I read that there's something about human skin. And so you can buy shoes and they have pocketbooks made out of human skin. And I'm saying, what the heck is this? So your audience can search on human skin shoes.
Right.
And you'll be able to find it and say, oh, my goodness. I mean, this is beyond
If you watch some of the information about Pizzagate that is well documented, you see how demonic the culture is. I saw it because I worked for Jack Kemp and there were neocons in that group and I saw how they operate. And they believe that if you just destroy all civil, legal, and cultural infrastructure, then, you know, sort of things will come back together and work.
Well, that's a part of cryodynamics. So it's the science of destruction and reconstruction.
Right.
So, basically, you destroy a country, as the United States military is being used to do, and then you can buy a generation or so of hegemony.
Right. So here's where our power can come from. First and foremost, the spiritual power and the spiritual covenant, what the Chinese call the Mandate of Heaven. But the reality is, if you look at who has power on this planet, a portion of the power comes from who can produce the high margin, that's organized crime, but the other is who can produce financial liquidity. And financial liquidity provides significantly more increase than organized crime. And the reality is the minute the global population realizes that this is organized crime, the financial liquidity goes away, and that's what's been happening. Now, the central banks have been trying to keep it going, but the more they pump, the less the increase out of that pump. And it's dying. And the reason it's dying, because deep down inside, nobody trusts the system. And they're pulling back. Okay. You see all these different tricks to try and get people back in with cryptocurrencies and all these different things. But the reality is the global world is looking at it and saying, these people are psychopaths. They're scorpions. We want to pull back. And that is both a danger and an opportunity.
Yes.
Because the society that can produce the most increase and preserve that kind of liquidity is the one that can perform. And that's the problem. Ultimately, these guys depend on harvesting the general population the minute the general population withdraws. And that's why, you know, for me, this idea of coming clean and withdrawing is so important.
We all need to take poison pills so that
we all need to
when
detox.
They try, that's right. So, well, I guess we're detoxing, but at the same time, we want when they try to harvest us that right. It's so unpalatable, they have to spit us out.
I absolutely agree. Well, you know, I have a theory that every time they tell someone to target people like you and me, all the folks in the trenches are like, no, not them, never again.
Yes.
They're too painful.
That's right.
I want to bring up control files because I believe control files are very, very important to how they've gotten as far as they have. And that is, so you watch somebody like Chuck Schumer, you watch somebody like John McCain, those guys have major control files. I saw the thing on Bernie Sanders the other day where he was grilling Vaughn for the appointment for OMB, and I said to you, oh, his job is to run a hit job on Vaughn because the Ziocons want that position for themselves. So say a little bit on control files, if you will.
Well, if you look at, I never really thought about it in those terms. I just saw the events. And then after what happened to some of the members of Congress with Jack Abramoff, then I went back and I looked at AbScam, and I wanted to understand who was sort of coordinating this. And I don't think that it is a coincidence that from AbScam to Abramoff to Jeffrey Epstein,
right,
that you've got Ziocons at the root of these problems. And you're right. So there's only 535 seats in the Congress. So you want to get all 535 of them.
You want to get dirty pictures on every one of them so that you can tell them what to do.
That's right.
And I have to tell you, if you look at the control file system, it's very economic.
Yes.
Because I can get you to steal $40 trillion for me.
Yeah.
And I don't have to pay you a big bonus.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
So I you know, and I watched as they, now there are some members of Congress who come close to understanding the way the system is rigged. And it was wonderful when Trump was able to get away with saying the system is rigged, because everybody knows by now, we all know that the system is rigged. And so there are certain members of Congress who came up against and tried to expose, and they got churned. I mean, you know, you could say I got churned, but I didn't end up in prison.
Right.
And
you didn't end up dead.
And I didn't end up dead.
A lot of people did.
That's right.
Right. Right.
That's right.
Right. And I think part of one of the things, the reason this got turbocharged in the 90s was the Telecommunications Act, because it allowed basically a very economic way of using government money to collect all phone and other digital communications. And so you could build control files on people at very economic cost. They had no secrets. You had all the secrets in the world, but they had no secrets. And once you approve bulk collection, you can go back. They have 100% of all of our conversations and emails since 1996.
But the thing that's so inexplicable is that the billing system for every phone call that's made in the U.S. is actually compiled or organized in Israel. It's unbelievable to me. But I remember reading Victor Ostrowski, who said by way of deception. And he has another book, I think it's The Other Side of Deception, said that the Mossad found that operating through corporations was the most useful way because corporations could go into places that intelligence could not go.
Right.
And I remember, like, for example, who got the contract to provide telecommunications service to every member of Congress. That was up for grabs. Israel got the contract.
Right.
And so I mean, the
you're basically, when you do that, you're turning over the control file system. You're basically taking the control file system and turning it over to Israel.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
So, you know,
you're turning it over to people who know how to use it.
Right.
And who have a clear vision and mission. They've got clearly articulated goals to each other, not to us. But and so we judge them by what they do. And we, those of us who have been looking at this for a long time, like you have been looking at it for a long time, and we can see what they're doing.
Okay, so Britain is a tiny country that ruled the world. You know, Israel is a tiny country who could conceive of running the world if
of
the United States and Russia killed each other.
Of course they could.
Right, right, right. And I would like to point out, when we raped Russia, the whole Russian mafia all got Israeli passports. So we're talking about a very unique partnership there. So if you look at the fundamental governance issues, when you talk about control files, or when you talk about what Chuck Schumer was saying about the intelligence agency and the ability, you're talking about an invisible governance structure and the dual passport system. You're talking about creating multiple invisible control structures that are basically causing the struggle that we're watching unfold. And here's the reality. If they are able to bring down the Constitution, so let's say we tear up the Constitution. We have a constitutional convention. They get in, they get control, completely hijack the process, as we know is relatively easy for them to do. They have the control files. They're using entrainment on telecommunications. They have all these different mechanisms we're talking about. What happens to us?
We become like
compost.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the Soylent Green thing.
Right. I mean, I don't think most Americans understand how, once you pull the covering of the Constitution, how we become simply a natural resource to be harvested.
Right.
Like any other
nation. Right, with no rights. So we are...
Well, no, not only no rights, but with robotics and artificial intelligence coming in.
Yes, that's right.
So...
the future looks bleak.
Well, so let's talk about what the world would look like if we did enforce the Constitution. Because one of the other secrets here is they've been shrinking the pie. They've been increasing their own pie, but by shrinking the whole pie. So I've said the current wealth globally is 1% of what it could be if we had a system where we could trust each other.
Yeah.
And so if you look at the possibilities, I mean, if you look at how oppressive this demonic force is and the possibilities if we reverse it, the wealth is so incredible. But I'm not just talking about financial wealth. We've lived in a world where living wealth and financial wealth have a win-lose relationship. So the popsicle index going down while the Dow Jones index is going up. Imagine a world where the more you drive the Dow index up, the higher the popsicle index goes, and the higher the popsicle index goes, the more. So when you talk about a win-win world where the young people see extraordinary opportunity to create living wealth or financial wealth, you're talking about a world which is a wonderful world to be a part of.
Well, if we bring it full circle, we're right back with our students here.
Right.
And the picture that you've painted for them, as well as of them, are young people who are excited about the future. They're excited about their opportunities, and they recognize that they have opportunities for a fantastic kind of growth that perhaps maybe they hadn't thought about
right.
for themselves before. But
right.
through our mutual interaction, now, you know, we're starting to think about, okay, we can do this
right.
and we can do that. And this is good for society.
Right. We can increase the pie more than they can.
Yes.
Right. It's so, one of the things that keeps coming back to my mind again and again, Hong Kong, if you look at the list of competitiveness, who's the most competitive country or city in the world? Hong Kong's number one. This is a city that's reinvented itself again
mm-hmm.
and again, and the people are the hardest. There's no harder working population
mm-hmm.
than that population. And yet, when you're in Hong Kong, what you realize is the young people are not excited about the future in Hong Kong.
Mm.
The young people are not, and because they see their freedom is diminishing.
Yes.
Here you come, and the young people are so excited about building the future.
Yes.
And building the future with the people here.
Yes.
And interacting globally. So we had students from Sri Lanka and Bhutan and Nepal.
Yes.
And they were just like puppies swarming
yeah.
with each other. And you see the power of that energy to create and build. To me, that's, you know, or you come to the United States, they are so depressed about
yes.
the future. And so I'll use the U.S. So you take the U.S. kids and the kids here, and you realize, and you see how the parents and families support these kids, and you see the way they're treated in the United
mm.
States or the student.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't even get me started on student loans. You know, you think.
Yeah, because I got the full complement of student loans.
So what you're seeing is you're seeing that question of, the one vision of the future where that attraction to freedom and opportunity is driving the increase explosively, and the other where they're just ready to quit.
Mm.
And it was interesting. I saw a great interview with Jack Ma, the head of Alibaba, and he was talking about how Alibaba needs to use artificial intelligence and robotics to give small business the tool to flourish.
Mm-hmm.
And if small business can flourish, the transition could work. But if you don't, if you just use robotics and AI to take away all the business from the small business, future's
right.
not going to work. And it's the same either or. And to me, it's so clear and simple. And the question is, how do I help my generation, your generation, how do we help them understand we have to create those conditions for the young people or there will be no future?
That's right. Over here on this side of the planet, though, I think we have a concept that I've bought into and basically shape my entrepreneurship class around it, and that's Gandhian engineering.
Right.
So we figure out ways to provide a solution for society that provides more for more people with less.
Right. Right. And it's very doable now.
And it's doable.
It's very doable. Okay, so let's talk about how. And one of the things I know you've been doing, you've been part of a group called Unrig, which is open source solutions. So the reality is if we're going to enforce the Constitution and deal with the money, you know, a lot of people in America get government checks.
Yes.
So we're going to have to come up with a way of creating income so that the government can't blackmail them with the government checks. That's part of this.
That's right.
Okay. I mean, certainly as a congresswoman, you saw.
Yes.
You know, everybody wants their check.
Yeah.
So that's a complicated full system change. And so whether what you're doing with Unrig, what I'll do I'm going to write up a lot of information and ideas about how. I don't want to cover all of that because to me, the important thing is we can all figure out how together once we understand we enforce the Constitution or.
Yes.
Right. It's like.
Or else.
Right. So you can either figure out how to make a life raft or you can drown.
Or you can experience the else.
So my attitude is we can figure this out once we're clear. That's our only opportunity.
Yes.
You can figure it out or die. And I'm not interested in dying. So not yet. So anyway, so I'll have a lot of information on how, but I want to just summarize some of it. The first issue, is we each individually in our own lives have a lot of power to switch our time, our attention, our money. So I call it coming clean. We don't have to watch the fake news. We can just shut it off.
That's right.
Right. We don't have to buy stuff from the Zycons and the Pilgrims who are behaving in Luciferian ways. We can just say, bye. We don't have to, and this is my big one, we do not have to put money in the banks that are stealing from us and are stealing from the U.S. government.
That's right.
Right. So, you know, I'll put up a link to our old article, Coming Clean, but whether it's our bank deposits, our media attention, our investments, our purchases, we don't have to play.
Exactly. So now what I've tried to do is to buy local. And so that's from my food to my clothes. Nothing sort of big and foreign and corporate, and certainly not the Unilevers and the, you know, sort of all of that.
So when you're here in Bangladesh, you have great local options.
Yes, I do.
Right here. I've been amazed walking around the street in the mall, and, you know, there's incredible local options on everything.
Yes.
Where I am, forget it. You know, in 2000, I could do more, and now it's really tough. So.
Yeah, because, I mean, where are you going to get in? The reality is different in the U.S. If you don't get it from Walmart, where are you going to get it? Amazon?
Right. So I do more and more online. Well, I'm now trying to wean myself from Amazon because if you look at where they're going, I just don't.
Yeah.
Ever since they bought into the CIA, because I don't know if this is Amazon. This just may be the CIA buying up everything. Right. So, but you can do what you can do, and you can definitely do it with your bank deposits because the bankers are the ones who've engineered the financial coup d'etat.
So what banks do we give our, in my case, very meager deposits?
Well, but if you look at how financial leverage works in the system, there's no such thing as a meager bank deposit. Your bank deposit is far more powerful than most people realize. I have a piece on my website called How to Find a Good Local Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very rare in America that there's not at least one or two good local banks and credit unions. Okay. And if you go through that, you can find it. We have a couple of Solari reports on how to find a good local bank. So, but get yourself. Now, remember, we're not just trying to get away from the criminals. We're trying to get behind the 5 to 10%
net. Yes, we want to build.
Right. So let's go back to the 10% slugs, 10% net energy plus. You need to be sending the blood to the heart, the brains, and the lungs, not to the toes and the fingers.
Yes.
So we're not just, we're trying to get you in business with people you can know and trust. So everybody at Solari knows I love my bankers. Mm-hmm. I trust my bankers. Mm-hmm. I think the whole financial system could crash and they would still be going. They're the most overcapitalized bank in America, but they are really good at what they do. And their business is helping individuals and families, their business and small business. And I really, really trust them. And they're very, very competent. They're faithful and they're competent. And I feel good because I know I got a problem. I can be anywhere in the world, call them up, and they're like that.
Yeah.
So part of this is getting every aspect of your life and money to have people you can count on. And that feels great.
That's okay. Right.
So we're trying to move the energy back to the heart and the lungs and the brain and do it in a way which is good for me and I feel safe in this world.
Yes.
When I got hit by the enemy of the state, I couldn't trust my bankers.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't trust my bankers. And I believe my bankers organized to steal from me. And there's no worse mm-hmm. feeling than having lawyers and bankers who are working
yes.
for the other team. So
that's right.
Okay. So Coming Clean, and I'll put up the link to the Coming Clean article, but I certainly, being here with you in Bangladesh, Cynthia McKinney is entirely clean. You're about as clean as you can get. So, and you do a lot to support the 5-10% net energy plus all over the world.
Yes.
Right. You do. Now, I want to point out, people say, oh, well, it's hopeless. Because, you know, the Ziacons in particular are so good at marketing the idea. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's hopeless. There's nothing you can do. I would like to point out that there are many examples of success stories when they have been completely defeated. But one of my favorites is homeschooling.
Oh, I have seen the results of homeschooling
right.
because, of course, it's always been on the block
right.
in Congress and under attack. And so the parents would bring their children. And those are the smartest kids.
Right, right. These kids in Bangladesh feel and act like homeschool kids back at home. Another one I just wanted to bring up, I don't know if you've been watching Vaxxed. The Vax team has done an incredible job. They made a great documentary about vaccines. But since then, they've been going around the country on a bus filming case studies.
Mm-hmm.
And the information, Cynthia, is just power,
yeah.
power, power. And we've been seeing an explosion of documentaries in the health freedom area. And the pushback on health freedom is overwhelming. And that's why the consumers are overwhelming the GMOs. You know, we now have California scheduling glyphosate as a carcinogen. It's like, and Monsanto and those guys can't stop it. You know, it's just,
that's right.
The push is too strong.
I remember back in 2010, I'm in the United Arab Emirates and I have the opportunity to meet the chief medical officer for the state of Pakistan. And it was a woman, and I told her, well, you don't want Bill Gates, Gates Foundation,
right. Right.
in your country.
Right.
And she looked at me like, who is this telling me that? And she's all excited because she got a chance to shake Bill Gates's hand.
Right.
Now the state of India is filing lawsuit
right.
against the Gates Foundation. And so I was there when they were forcing the soldiers to take the vaccines in the U.S. military. And
they still are.
And I was calling them out. And, you know, I was called kooky, loony.
Right.
That girl doesn't know what she's talking about. But, well, now it's, what, 7 years later. And
a lot of people have died.
Yes, that's right.
A lot of people.
And babies with abnormalities being born.
So where the pushback has to happen, I can come clean with my own money, but I still pay taxes.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I really don't have to pay a lot of taxes because I still have a lot of tax loss carryforwards, thank you to
mm-hmm.
the Department of Justice.
Uh-huh.
But we all have to pay taxes. And where we need collective action, both at the local, state, and federal level, is to begin to implement the financial management laws and the constitutional provisions related to appropriations together. And if you look at what I'm going to put up on how there's a lot of information about that, we'll get into that. And that needs to be part of an ongoing conversation. One of the things you pointed out to me yesterday is it needs to include the audit the Fed bill and the Treasury place-based and other financial disclosure. So we'll have a lot on that. But that has always been the tricky political issue where the Ziacons and pilgrims are masters at pulling people's feet out from under them.
So this is 2006, and I'm fed up
right.
with the wars.
Right.
So I say, Sherry Peel Jackson
mm-hmm.
lives around the corner from me. And so I say, Sherry, I would like to contract with you so you can do a series of workshops for my constituents, just teaching them what you know.
Right.
Sherry Peel, I lost the election. Well, I didn't lose it. It was stolen. And Sherry Peel Jackson ends up in prison.
Right.
So we never got to talk about the money, but I wanted to talk about how our tax dollars are being used against our will to finance these wars. It also just happens.
Well, but they're also being used to finance the war on us.
That's right. Right. But I also wanted to mention that it just so happened that the legislation to finance the wars in 2007 passed with exactly the number of votes required, 218 in the House. Had I been there, I would have voted no. I was targeted by Rahm Emanuel. And so my absence is what allowed us to move forward into this terrible predicament that we're in now. But imagine the conversation, like you say, if the Constitution were actually enforced,
right,
what kind of world would it be? And I say in my own little way, if I had been there in the Congress in 2007,
right,
and I voted no, and the 218 went the other way, what would our conversation be now?
Right. 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 And maybe the 27 trillion bailouts might not have happened.
That's right.
Or happened the way they happened.
Oh, well, I would have, if I had been there, I would have at least sought a vote on the transparency,
right,
and the auditability of those organizations,
right,
that receive the funding.
Right.
Just one sentence, I think, would have changed the whole outcome.
I totally agree. And one of the things I think we're trying to say is how much the war and violence question is connected to the money question.
Yes.
So there was one other point I wanted to bring up here, and that is, I have allies who say, oh, well, let's just all stop paying taxes. Now, if you do that, then what you do is you fail to finance the social safety net for a whole lot of people, and you hiccup cash flows for a whole lot of good businesses. And now that they've stolen $40 trillion, they're in the catbird seat because they get to, if you implode the system, they get to pick up everything cheap.
Well, that's exactly what happened to Soviet Union slash Russia.
Exactly. And so they would they can harvest an implosion.
Absolutely.
Right. And so what I've always said is, we're not going to have a tax revolt. We're going to have a tax enforcement. We're going to put our taxes in escrow, and we're going to require enforcement of the financial management laws. And we're going to use the control of the cash to be for the rule of law.
So now what happens when that 5 to 10% the slugs, what happens when they're all in the Congress? They're in the executive
branch.
Well,
because
judiciary.
If you do the escrows, depends on how you do them. But if you do them at the county or the state level, the logical way is to do state and county. And the money doesn't turn on until you're in. So for example, I'm just talking about one way to do it. You put the money in the escrow, you send the check for the military, you send the check for the debt, and you say, with respect to all the domestic expenditures, until you're in until you're in compliance,
right,
with the laws for financial management, we're sending you $100 million. You're sending us $100 million. You know something? Don't send us the $100 million. We'll take the $100 million here, and we'll just do a common law right of offset, and we'll take care of our own stuff.
Well,
here.
You
Thank
know,
you very
we
much.
Need some of these peace organizations to do that kind of analysis,
right,
and tell us what's the amount. I'm ready. I'm in.
Right. That's why place-based financial disclosure is so important, because what you will see as soon as you look at financial disclosure is you will see we're paying the government $150 an hour to do something that we could do for $25 less healthcare. And so if instead of them collecting all the money and then sending it back to us, we just work within the escrow, the opportunities are enormous. Now it's going to require all of us to take responsibility.
Yes.
Okay. So no making money on helping them bring narcotics into our neighborhood. That's got to stop.
Right.
So, but transparency can address a lot of these issues. Anyway, so I'll write a lot about that. And all of us, you with UNRIG, you know, us with at Solari, many other people, we're going to start now. We're having a conversation about how.
Yes.
And it's going to take all of us. And here's what's important for everyone.
We can crowdsource our solution.
That's right. We're going to crowdsource how to.
Yes.
We're going to crowdsource constitutional enforcement.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
That's right.
And it can be done because it's better than dying. Anyway, so we just have to figure out how to have fun crowdsourcing our constitutional enforcement.
That's right.
Okay, so each one of us can come clean in a way that energizes our life. But the other thing we can all do in every aspect of our life is support the 5 to 10%. So we're the Titanic Turners. Let's support them wherever we can. If you're part of an alumni network, let's say you're a leader in raising money for your university and the slugs are in charge, you can change your support. You know, you can do it at state and local and federal government. You can do it in civic organizations. You can do it in business. If you're working for a Ziocon company, get the hell out.
Now, one way, you know, we're dealing with this phenomenon that most people think that Congress is really bad, but that their congressperson is really good. So what I did was when I was asked to do some commentary on the John Ossoff, Karen Handel race, what I looked at was one thing that I became a whistleblower on, and that's this pledge that I had to sign, basically signing my loyalty to another country, which was Israel. So I looked at...
Now, AIPAC gave you that.
AIPAC. That's right. Well, of course, they've changed the tactic now that...
They didn't want to give you a passport. They just wanted the...
So now what they do is they require every candidate for Congress to issue a statement.
Right.
You go on Karen Handel's website, you can see her Israel statement. You go on John Ossoff's website, you can see his Israel statement. So what I would say, one tool that people can use is that public statement on Israel that the incumbent or the challenger
if they've
posts,
signed it, you and pull your
then you're a loser.
So how do I find that?
It will be on their website.
On AIPAC's website?
No, on the candidate's website. So you've got Sue Smith running for House of Representatives in Kansas. Sue Smith will have a statement about Israel. You know she signed the pledge.
Right.
Then you don't vote for her.
Right. 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 So how do you do it if they've signed the Pilgrim Pledge? Because those are secret.
Yeah, well, I don't know very much about the Pilgrim Pledge.
We need an underwriting capacity here.
The only thing I can say is that when given the choice to choose between a group of people who don't care about the United States and a group of people who do care about the United States, I have no choice but to make a choice, and I choose to stand with the people who care about the United States. And so...
Well, clearly there's some group of Americans, some of which who I believe are in the Pilgrim group, but a lot of whom have operational responsibility to make the United States go, that understand that we can't afford to let the United States collapse.
That's right.
And they know if we don't have that piece of real estate and the security that it provides and the wealth that it provides, that we're in serious trouble. Now, the neocons and some of the pilgrims, they don't care. They're that...
Right.
You know,
they don't care.
They're that psychopathic that they think they can be fine.
Right.
You know, and so, but you have others who are not psychopathic, and they know.
Right.
Now, they may play follower in this situation, You know, because you'll see a lot of Titanic Turners, when the Scorpions are in charge, they'll act like pigs instead of Titanic Turners. Because there's no point in fighting. You got to go with the flow. And so part of what we're trying to do is get some of those pigs to turn back into Titanic Turners.
Well, and that is possible. I remember Amilcar Cabral, who was very instrumental in getting rid of the Portuguese from Africa in terms of right. Colonial experience. And one of his theses was that you will have allies from the class that benefits from the wrongdoing. And so the encouragement of the pilgrims to become, who are now become, have become piggies because the Scorpions are in charge. The encouragement of them to become Titanic Turners right. is something also that we can do just by our opposition to the Scorpions and that 5% right. of the slugs.
The other thing the 10% I've seen, of the slugs. I've seen a lot of this in my clients and subscriber base. You will have people who long ago were supporters of Israel, or they're Jewish and they're part of these networks, and they are appalled at what's going on. So they're appalled at what's going on in the Palestinians. They're appalled at all of this, and they don't really know where to go to help organize to be yes. an alternative. Well, and I would say this, if you look at every group, you know, when I was a kid in Philadelphia, it was the Vatican, the Jews, and the Masons. And you had these three power groups. And over time, what happened was the real criminal element in each one rose to power. And so part of the problem is crime pays.
Yes.
And you're encouraging the worst behavior, and everybody's trying to compete. And if I don't outcompete these guys, you know, and so you've got a prisoner's dilemma problem. And so part of what we're trying to figure out, you know, we were all within these different pockets and we're watching and within our own ethnic or religious or tribal group, the thugs are in control.
Yes. And so, but we recognize that there's some good people over there.
Right.
Now, what do I need to do? It's just, you know, I use the civil rights movement as right. an experience to draw from. And there were a lot of people who were looking at what was going on in the South. They were in the North, and they were looking at it on their televisions. And they said, you know, we've got one Viola Liuzzo, who is a housewife. She could have remained a housewife, but instead she was in Michigan. She could have stayed there, but she said, no, I've got to be a part of the change. I've got to stand with these people who are opposing this. And she left her home, went to Alabama, and was shot. And it turns out that it was an FBI informant who either shot her or was sitting in the truck right. next to the person who shot her. So we have these people of goodwill in every one of these groups. They are encouraged when they see people challenging these bad guys.
Right.
And so we have a responsibility to challenge them, one, so we're not complicit, but also to inspire those good people to join us. And that's how we beat them.
Right. What I found when I used to work on community development, sort of turning neighborhoods around with equity investment, is whatever the group I'm in, I know who my slugs are, and I know how to avoid them. But when I go into a different group, I don't know who the slugs are.
Right.
So part of these first steps for all of us is figuring out, in anything that we're a part of, how do we support the 5 to 10%, and how do we help the 5 to 10% network across all
right.
these different worlds and cultures and countries and continents?
That's
because
right.
because we're up against a global demonic force, and we have to be a global force, but we have to find a way for that 5 to 10% to build the networks of cooperation and trust. And that's why I come back to the kids.
Yes.
You gotta circulate the kids. They gotta build those relationships, because that's the glue that's going to create this world. So you're doing it.
I'm trying. And I'm glad you put the theoretical framework around what I'm doing, because I hadn't analyzed it that way.
No, you just do it. You
just, yeah.
Yeah. You're too busy doing to think about it. Well, no, you're teaching it. You're teaching it. Okay. So, before we close, tell us how we keep up with you and your work. Because, you know, I'm always checking with you. What are you going to do about this? What are you going to do about that? What are you going to do? So how do we follow Cynthia McKinney?
Probably the first place to go is to my website, allthingscynthiamckinney.com. Uh-huh. And there I get behind, but I have a commitment that I respond to every email that comes to me from there, because people took their time to go there and send me a message, and so I will respond to it. The second way is that I post a lot on Facebook and Twitter.
Can we forgive you for having a Facebook account?
I know, and I resisted it for a long time.
So here's my theory. When the general population sees the opportunity and sends you sufficient donations,
yes,
you will pay a lovely long man like the one I talked to last night, create the web capacity so you don't need to use Facebook. So
that's exactly right. Right. That's right. That's right.
Okay. So your website, then Facebook page.
And Twitter.
And you're doing
the Facebook. Oh, yeah. And you know, there's lots of Facebook pages that have my name on it.
Right.
The one that is associated with me that I respond to is Cynthia McKinney Official.
Okay. Now, you do a lot of interviews.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I've been focused on the what's called the alt-right, but there's some kind of synergy going on, because I know I'm left, and all of a sudden I've broken bread with a whole lot of right people, right. And we're like peas in a pod.
Right. Right.
So this is a conversation, you know, that conversation defeats divide and rule.
Right.
And so I teach my students Paulo Freire, who outlined the mechanisms of oppression and the tools for liberation.
Right.
And unity for liberation, collaboration, organization, cultural synthesis, these are the tools for liberation. So I try to walk that talk. I try to practice it. And so I've been talking to militia people, Christian identity people, I mean, you know, whoever they say I'm supposed to hate.
Right.
Those are the people I want to talk to.
Right. And I'm trying to draw a circle around that intersection and say, you know something? Y'all can do what you want to do if you can figure out a way for your revenues to be greater than your expenses doing it.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Because that's, you know, if you can economically optimize your solutions, then you're self-financing.
Right.
Right. So that's how I started the Slayer Report. I turned to my lawyer in 1998. I said, you and I are going to have to find a way to support ourselves at retail, because unless individuals support us, we can't be loyal to individuals. So that's what we're going to have to do.
Yes.
Okay. So Cynthia McKinney, this has been a great conversation, and it's the beginning of a discussion that's going to go on how we're going to enforce the Constitution until we do.
Until we do.
Until we do. Anything is possible, and anything can happen. As you know, I have a theory that the Midianites are going to kill each other if we will just get together. So, and so if the faithful, competent people will get together, the Midianites will kill each other, and then it will fall to us to try and make it work. So before we end, this has been a great conversation. It's been a great launch of what will continue to be a great conversation. Anything else you want to say before we close?
I think my sister, Catherine Austin Fitz, has just said it all.
Okay, well, we're flying back. I'm flying back to the United States, and you are too.
That's right.
But not for long enough, as far as we in the United States are concerned. But you'll be back and forth.
Yes, I'll be back and forth.
And so if you would, the one request I do have is, if there is an opportunity for anybody to hear you speak, or support your efforts in the United States, you let me know and we'll publish that on the Slayer Report. Make sure our subscribers and reader know how to follow all things Cynthia McKinney.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're in cahoots. Ladies and gentlemen, you have a great day.